Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. My tale is about murder, that crime of crimes. Shakespeare said, "Murder, though it have no tongue, speaks with most miraculous organ." And indeed, in this case, the murderer unwittingly convicts himself by saying too much. It is a story with surprising twists and turns, with double crosses on double crosses. Listen to a man being set up to murder. Our mystery drama, Turnabout is Foul Play, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sidney Sloan and stars Mason Adams and Vicky Vola. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Give your hand.
That's the question when you catch the common cold. Sneezing, drips, congestion. Then take 12-hour Contact. You'd need 6 cold tablets, 2 every 4 hours, or 3 ounces of Cold's liquid, 1 every 4 hours, or just 1 Contact for up to 12 hours continuous relief of those symptoms. The Tiny Time pills do it. Both the others contain things for aches and fever. The liquid, something for coughs, not found in Contact. Your cold, your choice.
Give your cold to Contact.
6301. Take Contact. Only as directed.
Suburban Savings in New Jersey has grown a lot larger recently with 2 new offices. One in Deal on Atlantic Avenue at Neptune Avenue. The other in Somerset on Easton Avenue in the Rutgers Plaza Shopping Center. At both of these new offices, you can choose from a whole selection of free gifts when you open a new account. And for a limited time, Suburban is offering a top 8.17% annual effective yield on 7.75% savings certificates, guaranteed 6 years, $1,000 minimum. Early withdrawal is subject to a penalty. Of course, Suburban also offers you a wide selection of savings plans to choose from. Each of these offices is giving away a free, all-expense-paid vacation for 2 in Bermuda. And you don't have to be a customer to win. Just come in and fill out a coupon. Get in on the celebration of Suburban Savings' 2 new offices. Full details at the bank. In Deal on Atlantic Avenue, on Neptune Avenue, and in Somerset on Easton Avenue in the Rutgers Plaza Shopping Center.
This is Tommy Makem. I'm sitting in the John Barleycorn, located at 209 East 45th Street, just off 3rd Avenue. John Barleycorn is New York's first and most famous Irish singing pub. If you want a sample of what Irish hospitality is really like, you should come in and soak up the atmosphere. The hospitality is warm, the people are cheerful, and the service is just fantastic. They have an old saying at the Barleycorn, "There are no strangers here, only friends you haven't met." And you can prove that to yourself by dropping in anytime. You can have lunch, dinner, or supper 7 days a week. And a good time all the time.
Make reservations now for New Year's Eve. For only $30 per couple, you enjoy a complete 5-course sirloin steak dinner, novelties and table treats, midnight champagne toast, continuous live entertainment. Call YU61088. That's YU61088. As everybody looks toward 1975, New York Magazine looks back 25 years to 1949, the year we entered modern times. Arthur Miller writes how it was when Death of a Salesman opened. Betty Friedan describes the 1949 housewife, Betty Friedan. Best Bet said go see the Trapp Family Singers live. Great pictures and great articles to help you understand why we are where we are today in 1949, the year New York changed. In New York Magazine's special year-end double issue.
Pulled into the parking lot of the seedy motel, which bore the name Ritz Manor, Rooms and Meals, reasonable rates. Seated at the wheel of the modest car, obviously a rental, is a handsome, well-dressed man in his middle 30s. At his side is an equally attractive woman whose appearance and manner would make her stand out in any company. The man parks the car in front of Cabana Numero 4, as it is called on the sign posted over the door. He gets out and opens the car door for the woman.
This flea bag again.
It's safe. They know me here. They don't ask questions.
Oh, good Lord, it's stifling in here. Turn on the air conditioning.
Okay. It'll be cool in a few minutes. Should be some ice in the fridge. You want a drink?
Thanks. I'll take it without adulteration.
There you are.
Thanks, darling. He's looking at you. Well, that's better. Much better.
I hope it improves your mood. You've been in a miserable state from the moment I picked you up.
Do you blame me, Bill?
Oh, come on, Adrian.
Meeting in little out-of-the-way restaurants, going to cheap motels, hiding on side streets, scared stiff we might be seen together.
It won't be forever.
How long is forever? We've known each other for 2 years.
No, not now. Not again. Are we going to rehash that old business?
No. No rehash, Bill. We're going to decide what we must do. We can't put it off any longer.
Our divorce is out. Anne wouldn't stand for it.
She can't keep you tied to her if you don't want to stay.
Oh, yes, she can. It's all her money. All of it. I don't have a dime unless she gives it to me.
Well, there's an answer to that, too.
What?
She's not well. You're her husband. You'll get it all when she dies.
Well, if you mean waiting...
You told me yourself that the doctor said...
Dr. Richardson said she wouldn't recover, but he also said that it was the kind of illness that could go on and on. She could live another 10 years.
Why?
Why? It's the nature of her illness.
I'm not talking about her illness. There are other ways.
You're not actually suggesting...
I'll give it to you cold and clear. One, you're married to her. You love me. Two, she's ill, dying.
But...
Now, hear me out. She's dying, slowly. 10 years, you said. Do you expect me to hang around for 10 years? I won't wait, Bill.
Adrian, darling, listen to me.
It's a simple decision you have to make. Adrian... Or Anne.
We'll be penniless. I'll have nothing.
Not if she dies while you're still married. Not if she dies knowing nothing about me.
Now, Mrs. Sperling, I want you to relax completely. I want you to be receptive to my words.
Yes, Doctor.
But it is not my words which will cure you. You must cure yourself.
Oh, but Dr. Lupescu, Dr. Richardson said...
My dear lady, I said I would not treat your case unless you gave me your full confidence. Has this Dr. Richardson held out any hope for you?
No. He's been very honest with me. He told me that my time was limited.
There, you see? Words like that can be destructive. They are negative and have no place in my work. You must think and feel positive. You are to get well.
Yes, Doctor.
Have you sent this Dr. Richardson away?
Oh, that would be rather difficult.
Why?
Well, Dr. Richardson's been an old friend for many years. He'd be hurt.
My dear lady... Yeah, it is obvious that I have little influence on you. And if that is the case, I cannot do you any good. So, madam, I bid you goodbye. I shall not return.
Oh, no, please. Oh, please don't go. You give me hope. I'll do anything you ask.
You will obey me completely.
Yes, yes.
Very well. I shall continue. If, however, I feel that you have the slightest doubt... I shall terminate our relationship immediately. There will be no second chance.
I understand. And I agree.
Very well. Now, I am going to put you to sleep. A gentle sleep. A healing sleep. Now, lean back. Relax. Relax completely. There, that is better. Now, concentrate on my eyes. Look deep into them. Deep. The world is receding. You can feel nothing. You can see nothing but my eyes. Now sleep. 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 Mrs. Sperling, you are asleep, but you can hear my voice. You will obey my commands. Answer me.
I will obey your commands.
You will awaken in a moment or two, and you will feel better than you have felt for a long time.
Yes. Yes.
I am going to give you a post-hypnotic suggestion. You will, after I have been gone an hour, ask for the telephone. It will be brought to your bedside. You will call your attorney, Harold Gifford, and you will ask him to come here next Wednesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. All you will say to him on the phone is that you wish to change your will. I'll tell you Wednesday morning how you will change your will.
Hello.
Bill?
Yeah.
This is Harold, Bill. Awake you?
No, no. No, I've been up for hours. What's a good word, Harold? Are you breaking our golf date?
No, nothing like that. Mind if I ask you a personal question?
Oh, go ahead. You're our lawyer, aren't you?
I am also your friend. Bill.
Yeah?
How are you and Ann getting along?
How are we get? What's a funny question? Fine, I guess.
Anything happened recently? A quarrel? Serious misunderstanding? Another woman?
No quarrel, no misunderstanding. Ann loves me. I take the fifth on the last question about another woman. Anyway, Ann doesn't know about it. What goes?
Forget it. Sorry, I won't.
Now, wait a minute. You can't ask me all sorts of personal questions and then hang up without telling me why you're asking them. Has Ann been talking to you?
Legal ethics, Bill. Can't answer that.
Then she has been talking to you.
Bill.
About us, that is.
I'm her lawyer, Bill. I can't.
And to hell with your legal ethics. You were my friend before you were our lawyer.
I'm ringing off, Bill.
Does she want a divorce?
Wouldn't she have told you if she did?
She's changing her will, that's it. She's changing her will. Harold, that's it, isn't it? That's what you've been trying to tell me.
I haven't been trying to tell you anything, Bill.
Okay, counselor. Thanks anyway. I'm going to have a talk with her.
Leave my name out of it. And by the way, double-check that new doctor of hers, Lupescu.
Lupescu, huh? Sure, I'll check him out. And thanks again.
You have spoken with your attorney, Mrs. Sperling?
I have spoken with him, Doctor. The will is being changed in accordance with your instructions.
Good. Now, when I clap my hands, you will awaken, refreshed, and in excellent spirits. There, Mrs. Sperling. How are you feeling?
Wonderful. Oh, I feel so relaxed.
I told you that you would.
Come in.
Oh, I'm not disturbing anything, am I?
No, darling. I want you to meet Dr. Lupescu. Doctor, this is my husband.
I do. Anne, dear, whatever happened to Dr. Richardson?
Nothing, Bill. But Dr. Lupescu's been able to help me.
Dr. Richardson couldn't.
Mr. Sperling, my services to your wife can be terminated with a word.
Well, here's the word. Send me your charges, Dr. Lupescu, or perhaps you'd like a check
now. Oh, Bill, you don't know what you're saying. Dr. Lupescu's very necessary to my health. He's done more for me in a short time.
Please, madam. Please, do not defend me. I will leave you to settle this matter between you.
But you will come back, Doctor.
What? You'd ask him to come back
please,
after...
Please, Mr. Sperling, consider the state of your wife's health before you make irrevocable statements.
Well, if you would kindly leave, I'd be able to speak to my wife about the state of her health.
Good day.
And listen to me. He calls himself doctor. Whether he is or not is a matter for conjecture.
You don't know anything against him? Without knowing, with just your suspicions, you rush in here, you insult them.
And listen to me.
No, I'm not going to listen to you. You don't have my welfare at heart.
He's turning you against me. That I do know.
What? What are you saying?
What was Harold Gifford doing here yesterday?
What? Why do you ask?
He was here, wasn't he?
Yes, he dropped in to see how I was feeling. It was just a friendly call. Harold's an old friend.
He's also our lawyer.
Yes?
Did you call him and ask him to come here, or did he just drop in, as you say?
I don't understand, Bill. What's all this got to do with us? With Dr. Lupescu?
A great deal. I don't know what part, if any, that phony doctor has in this, but did you, and I want you to answer this honestly... Did you tell Harold that you wanted to change your will?
No.
That's the truth?
Did Harold tell you that I did?
No, he couldn't. Confidential matter between attorney and client.
Well, then why are you so worked up? Did you think I was cutting you out?
I don't know what I thought.
Because it isn't true. I love you, Bill. I haven't been much of a wife to you since I came down with this thing.
And let's not talk
no,
about
no,
it.
No, we must. There's no point in pretending that I'm going to get well. I'm not.
And
after I go, everything I have will be yours, Bill. I want it to be that way. Because I love you.
Penny for your thoughts, Bill.
What?
You've been so preoccupied.
I'm sorry, Adrian.
Something bothering you?
Yeah, plenty.
Do you want to tell me?
My wife is changing her will.
What? How do you know?
I know. Gifford called me. He's our lawyer. I'm being cut out.
Completely?
Oh. A few crumbs might be left for me. I don't expect it'll be much.
Okay. What's the next move?
I've spoken to her. She denies everything.
Can you believe her?
I want to, but there's this new doctor, Lupescu. He seems to exert a very strong, a sinister influence.
Listen, Bill. And listen carefully. She hasn't much longer.
No, Adrian. Adrian, you're urging me to kill her, aren't you? You're telling me to commit murder.
No, Bill. Not murder.
What?
An act of mercy. She's sick. A lingering illness. Wouldn't it be more humane to shorten her agony, her pain, the wait for death?
Adrian, please.
Okay. Let's consider it selfishly. I love you, and you love me. She stands between us. She's legally your wife. Divorce is impossible.
No, it's not impossible. We just wouldn't have the money. I'd stop being a damn parasite, and I'd get myself a job.
A job? Don't make me laugh. At what? You've never done a thing in your life but play tennis, golf, or backgammon.
So all you loved about me was the money I would get.
No, Bill. But the money was one of the considerations. With the money out of the picture, it doesn't quite balance. Now let's stop fighting each other and start doing something constructive about it. What do you say, darling?
Yeah.
Let's go over the road again. Anne is dying. To help her is an act of mercy.
Bill Sperling is being forced to make an important decision. To paraphrase an old expression, some men are born murderers, some achieve murder, and some have murder thrust upon them. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
You've seen the Budweiser commercials on television, and maybe you've wondered how long people have been putting that famous Bud label on things. Well, not as long as the brewers of Bud have been putting things on the label. Things like a list of Bud's most important ingredients. Quote, brewed by our original process from the choicest hops, rice, and best barley malt. And things like the following statement. This is the famous Budweiser beer. We know of no brand produced by any other brewer which costs so much to brew and age. Our exclusive Beechwood aging produces a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability you'll find in no other beer at any price. Unquote. Yes, brewing beer right does make a difference. Read the Bud label. Taste the king of beers, and you'll agree, when you say Budweiser, you've said it all. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
If you're planning a night in the town and the cost kind of scares you, relax. The Riverboat, New York's largest nightclub at the foot of the Empire State Building, offers the ultimate in nightclub packages. The concert dinner plan, unlimited drinks, a great sliced sirloin steak entree, dancing, and a show. Would you believe the cost is $9.95 per person for the whole deal? Yes, the Riverboat gives you all you care to drink. You name it, you drink it. And you get a great sliced sirloin steak entree. And what entertainment? Trumpet genius Joe Newman and his all-stars. Rock to the sounds of the Hank B. Band. And every night there's a show headed by the legendary Teddy King and young Roger Birdall. You get it all for $9.95 per person. That's right, just a nickel under $10, plus a small music charge, get you all those drinks, beef, bands, and the show. Spend New Year's Day on the river, dancing, dining, and a great show for the family. Your first child is free, and your second kitty is $1 till 2 o'clock.
Hey, ma'am, what's for dinner? Hey, ma'am, what you got?
You can entertain a crowd at reasonable cost if you plan around ShopRite savings for sit-down dinners or buffet. A ShopRite 17 to 22-pound grade A turkey will fill the bill at just 47 cents a pound. Or plan on ShopRite's shank portion smoked ham, just 79 cents a pound. At ShopRite's appetizer counter, you'll find a variety of cold cuts and salads. Throughout the store, there are dips, chips, mixers, and lots of frozen food treats, so you'll be prepared for anything. ShopRite for the holidays. And have a very happy holiday season from ShopRite.
She loves the family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, ma, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
This is WOR New York, an RKO General Station, your station for news as it happens, and for Mystery Theater.
The die is cast. The game is set. A woman is to be murdered so that her husband and his friend can live happily ever after on her money. As yet, the marked woman is unaware of the fate in store for her. She calls her attorney and asks him to come to her bedside.
You seemed very disturbed when you called me, Anne, but you were very evasive when I asked you what was bothering you.
Well, I couldn't speak freely. The doctor was with me at the time.
I want to talk to you about that doctor.
Well, I won't listen to anything against him, Harold.
Look, Anne, I'm not speaking as your attorney. I'm speaking as your friend. Lupescu... Well, Lupescu is...
Dr. Lupescu.
Okay, Dr. Lupescu. Anne, he worries me.
Why?
He's only been your physician for a short time.
2 months.
That's a very short time, don't you think, for you to be placing so much confidence in him?
The way you hesitated. I know you were thinking of something else when you said confidence.
Well, yes, I was. That guy may be after your money.
Oh, Harold, I won't listen to this from you.
Well, damn it, Anne, you are changing your will in his favor.
Yes.
And you've denied it when Bill questioned you.
Have you?
Now, wait a minute. I've told him nothing, but he guessed what you had in mind.
Well, I can't control his guessing.
Why are you doing this, Anne?
Why? Because Dr. Lupescu has great work to accomplish in this world, and my useless money can be the beginning of a great medical research foundation.
Bunk.
What?
Unadulterated bunk.
Oh, I'd stop that right now. Look, I've known you, and I've liked you for many years.
Okay, I'm sorry. He's a great man. But what about Bill? Why are you cutting him off?
I'm going to set up a trust fund that will make...
I know you told me, Anne. You're going to give him a handout, a modest little allowance.
Enough to meet his needs.
And no more.
Harold, I think I must ask you if you intend to carry out my wishes.
Sure, sure. But I feel it my duty to...
Your duty is to me, your client, to obey my wishes.
If you're in your right mind, Anne...
I assure you, I know exactly what I'm doing.
Do you? Do you really?
Oh, Bill. Come in. I wasn't expecting you.
Were you asleep? It took you so long to answer.
No. No, I wasn't asleep. I thought we decided it wasn't a good idea for you to be seen here.
I had to talk to you. Look, it has to be done right away.
The sooner the better.
Gifford has got the will ready for her signature, and I found some scribbled handwritten notes of hers in the wastebasket. Guess how much she's going to leave me. $10,000 a year. I couldn't go 3 months on that.
Well, what's the plan?
Here, look at this. It's a suicide note.
Oh, to my dear husband. Bill, forgive me for what I'm about to do, but as you know, my life has been intolerable. I know I can never recover my health, and although I know how hard this will be for you, I must put an end to my pain. I know you will understand, my darling, your loving wife.
What do you think?
Two things wrong with it. One, it isn't signed.
I'll get her to sign it. I'll slip it to her to sign along with a raft of other papers. I have to do this every month to take care of certain business and investment matters.
Okay. Okay, you'll get her signature. On a typewritten suicide note? How kosher do you think that's going to look?
Well, she uses her typewriter for almost all her correspondence.
Including suicide notes? If I were the police investigating this, I'd be mighty suspicious.
Look, I can't force her to write the note. Can I?
No, I guess not.
Now, if I'm questioned, I'll point to the fact that since she's been ill, she's written everything on the typewriter. It's on a special stand next to her bed.
Yeah? Well, what else?
What else is there?
A little matter of how it's to be done.
Oh, sleeping pills, an overdose. See, every night when I'm home, I bring her a warm glass of milk.
In the milk?
Yeah. And then I'll substitute a second milk glass and wash the first thoroughly.
The empty pill bottle?
On top of the suicide note.
When?
Tonight.
Yes?
It's me and Bill.
Oh, come in, Bill. Come in.
I thought you might be asleep, dear.
No, no such luck. You know the trouble I have getting to sleep. What a pleasant surprise. Oh, you brought me my milk.
Just like old times. The good old times. Remember?
Yeah, like old times. Henrietta's taken over your job. She's been bringing my bedtime milk.
Yeah, I told her she wouldn't be needed tonight.
Well, glad to see you back on the job.
Would you like to take it now while it's nice and warm?
Oh, just set it down, dear. I'll drink it in a minute. I want to talk to you.
That reminds me. It's first of the month. All those papers to sign. I got them here in my briefcase.
In a minute. Let's talk.
Nope. Business first, then conversation. It'll only take a couple of seconds. Here you are, Anne. It's only a few. Now sign right here.
Right.
And here.
Right.
Now here. And here. Here, I was quick, wasn't it?
Now for our conversation.
Oh, wait. One more item to be disposed of first. The milk.
Oh, leave it there, Bill. I'll drink it. I don't like it too warm anyway.
But, Anne...
Don't fuss over me. Look, Bill, I've got something serious to tell you.
What?
Well, I've been speaking with Harold, and he tells me that I'm not being fair to you. When you asked me the other day whether I was changing my will, I lied to you. I don't know why I did, but something inside me made me lie.
I suspect it.
And even speaking to Harold yesterday, I was suddenly and unaccountably angry when he mentioned you and said that what I was planning wasn't quite fair to you.
Well, why are you telling me this now, Anne?
I don't know. But the restriction which kept me from telling you everything is suddenly gone.
Go on.
And I wanted to say that if you object to what I have in mind... I'll drop it completely, and I'll order Harold to destroy the new will. I haven't signed it yet.
Anne, you're too wonderful. You're too kind. I don't deserve your love.
Oh, darling, I've never seen you like this.
Oh, I've been a rotten husband to you. But I'm going to change. You'll see, I'm going to change. I'm going to be with you every hour of the day. I'll never leave your side.
Darling.
I love you.
Bill. Darling. Oh, it's so good to have you back again. I know that you've strayed. When you took that apartment, I knew.
Anne, listen.
Don't explain. I don't want an explanation. I don't need them. You're back. That's good enough for me. No, it is getting late. It's long past my bedtime and time for my warm milk.
No, give that glass to me.
Darling, you've spilled it.
No, it's no good. It's cold. Let me get you another glass.
Don't bother. I'll sleep without it. Just kiss me goodnight. Oh, it's wonderful to have you back, my dear. My Bill. What? Hello?
Miss Bartley?
Yes?
Dr. Lupescu is here.
Send him away, Anne. Tell him to go away.
Oh, I can't do that, Bill. Ask Dr. Lupescu to come up, Henrietta.
Then I'm going.
Bill. But, Bill, you'll be back.
I don't know. Maybe I will, maybe not. Good night, Anne.
Yes?
Adrian, I just came from the house.
Yes?
I'm afraid that I was interrupted and then...
You didn't do it. You didn't? Answer me.
No, everything went as I planned and then...
Then you lost your nerve. You chickened out. All that money for us and you chickened out at the last minute.
No, look, Adrian, you don't understand. She said that she would tell Gifford to destroy the new will.
Destroy it? Are you sure?
Yes.
Has she signed it yet?
No, she told me she hadn't signed it.
Can you believe her?
I believe her.
But you said you were interrupted. By whom?
By Dr. Lupescu. But I had already decided that I couldn't go through with it.
You hadn't given her the milk?
Well, she tried to take and drink it, and I grabbed the glass. It spilled, but this was before Lupescu got there. And when he came, I left.
How long ago did this happen?
I don't know. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I stopped at the first phone I saw to call you.
You could go back. You could go back now.
No, I couldn't go back. I don't know how I could have thought I could kill her in the first place.
No. I guess I was asking too much of you.
Look, I want to see you.
No.
We've got to talk.
It's over. It's all over, lover boy.
Coming. Oh, Harold, come on in.
Been trying to reach you for the last 3 days. Where have you been?
On my boat. I just got back to the apartment 20 minutes ago.
Alone? Alone on the boat?
Yeah. I just didn't want to see anybody, talk to anybody.
Or listen to the radio?
Just the weather report.
I see. Well, it's going to look very bad.
What is?
You're being gone this time.
What does my being away for 3 days have to do with anything?
Everybody's been looking for you. Anne is dead.
What? Anne? Oh, good Lord. Anne.
Look, you don't have to put on a performance for me, Bill.
Performance?
Everybody knows that your marriage to Anne was anything but perfection.
I loved her. That night when I saw her, I realized for the first time in years how much I loved her. I made up my mind that I'd cut out all the nonsense and try to make her last few years a little happier.
How did you leave her?
Well, the party was a little messed up. I was with her just as she was going to sleep. Henrietta knocked and said that Dr. Lupescu was downstairs, and Anne told her to send him up, and that angered me, and I left.
Mm. That's about what Henrietta told the police.
The police?
Yes. Seems that Anne died from an overdose of sleeping pills.
Sleeping pills?
They were given to her in her warm milk, which she always takes before going to sleep. Henrietta says that you insisted on taking the milk up to her.
But she didn't. She didn't. I mean, I accidentally spilled. I brought her the milk, but she didn't drink it. It spilled.
You'll have to see the police, Bill. I suggest that you do it right away.
You think that I killed her, don't you?
Better try squaring this with the police, Bill. You're wasting your time on me.
After Harold Gifford left, Bill stared into space, unable to comprehend the events which had swirled around him and now threatened to overwhelm him completely. Anne's death was difficult enough for him to accept, but now he must face the police and their questions with the knowledge that despite his innocence, he must appear guilty to them. I'll be back shortly with Act Three.
Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all. You hear freedom spirit like a wild bird's call. Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all. Living free. Living free.
The urge hits. You know you have to hit the road. So with Buick Skylark SR firmly in hand, you do just that. Quickly, confidently, you're on your way. Skylark SR's touring car cockpit. Its bold stance and spirited V6 engine make exhilarating excursions a daily occurrence. Find out at your Buick dealer now.
Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all. Living free. Living free.
Food shoppers, all the Bohack and Village employees hope you and your family are enjoying the holidays. They've put together a special sale for you at low prices because of the dent Christmas put into your budget. This week, tender succulent and pork loins are sale priced at a low 69 cents a pound for the rib end and only 79 cents a pound for the loin end. Center cut loin pork chops, only $1.19 a pound. Find lean and tender fresh hams. The shank half is a low 89 cents a pound. Or how about a juicy chuck steak? First cut USDA choice beef and just 69 cents a pound. Freshly ground beef for only 79 cents a pound when you buy 5 pounds or more. The special 5 cent items this week are Mighty Fine Pudding and Campbell's Chicken Noodle Soup. Both are yours for only 5 cents each with coupons and any $2 purchase. And here's a real saver for you. U.S. number one Yellow Globe Onions, a 3 pound bag for only 29 cents. That's this week only and only at your nearby Bohack or Village supermarket.
Sperling's life had taken on all the aspects of a nightmare. It is true that he had planned to murder his wife, but at the last minute, he found that he could not do it. Imagine his bewilderment when he hears that his wife has been murdered, and in exactly the manner he had contrived. The finger points in only one direction, his.
Adrian?
Yes?
I've got to see you.
No, it's over. Thought we settled all that.
It's terribly important. Anne is dead.
Strange the way you said that.
Strange?
She's been dead since last Wednesday night. I heard it on the late news. You act as if you just found out.
I have. I've been away on my boat.
What? Another story? You putting me on, Billy boy?
I didn't do it. I'm telling you the truth. I swear I didn't know.
Ah, that's very good. What are you going to do, plead loss of memory?
I told you, Adrian, I didn't do it. You know I didn't do it.
Trying to set me up for an alibi? Well, I don't want any part of it. Please don't call me again. I won't be involved.
You can be made to talk. You can be made to testify.
Sure. You go right ahead and bring me into court. I'll say you planned it. Milk, sleeping pills, phony suicide note, the whole dirty wash.
Adrian, you can't.
Try me. I'd advise you to leave my name out of it. Bye.
Hello. 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 Hello.
Oh, now, come on. Who is that?
Yes?
Mr. Sperling? William Sperling?
Yeah.
Sergeant Joseph Marchetti, homicide. Can I come in?
Yeah, sure. Come on in.
Thanks. Mind if I come right to the point, Mr. Sperling?
Please do.
Your wife was murdered, Mr. Sperling, and you were a prime suspect.
That's purely conjecture, Mr.
Sergeant.
Sergeant.
Mr. Sperling, Sergeant Marchetti.
Okay, Sergeant. Are you charging me with my wife's murder?
Would you like to hear what I've been able to find out while you were missing for 3 days?
I can explain my absence.
You'll get plenty of chance to do that. But listen to me first, huh? A guy goes to see his wife. Then he gives her a glass of warm milk. Wait till I finish. A glass of milk has a lot of sleeping tablets melted in it. Enough to knock off a healthy woman. But Mrs. Sperling is a sick woman. Very weak. She goes very fast in spite of all that Dr. Lupescu, he got there a few minutes after she drank the milk, could do to help her.
You said murder a moment ago. Isn't it possible that my wife, being in poor health, committed suicide?
I'm glad you brought that up, Mr. Sperling. There was a suicide in the
well.
We found it later.
Yes.
It was addressed to you. Typewritten.
All my wife's correspondence for the last couple of years was done on the typewriter. She had it next to her bed.
Okay, so she typed the note. But it's the signature that bothers me.
You can easily determine whether or not it's genuine.
Oh, we had a handwriting expert. Look at it.
And?
It's her signature, all right. No doubt about that. Only one thing.
What?
Why should she start off by addressing the letter to my dear husband and then end up by signing it real formal and Sperling? Can you explain that, Mr. Sperling?
I don't want to see you, Bill.
You've got to help me.
No, find another attorney. I'm too busy.
You're condemning me without listening to me. You could give me a few minutes. I'm an old friend, Harold. 5 minutes.
I'll give you 5 minutes. Start talking.
Okay. Now, look. I must tell you that when I came into Ann's room that night, I did so with the intention of killing her.
It's going to be a tough job selling that story to a jury, Bill. Changed your mind at the last minute, eh?
It's the God's honest truth.
Maybe it is. But they're going to think, if he didn't do it, who did?
Lupescu. He came in right after I left.
Why should he?
He was going to get all our money.
You're forgetting one very important thing, Bill. The will had not yet been signed by Ann. The only one to gain by her death would be you at that time.
Yeah, why should he do it? All he had to do was wait. I don't get it. I mean, he knew that Ann hadn't signed the will. If he killed her, he wouldn't get a dime. Why should he do it?
Bill, that's it. He kills Ann, but there's no motive. He's in the clear. And you're sunk.
Yeah, but Harold...
You come to trial. You're convicted. Life in prison.
Yeah, but he still doesn't get the money.
Yes, he can get it. He sues to have the will overturned. The intent of the new will, even if not signed, is for him to get the money. Any lawyer worth his salt could win this case. They'd call me for a witness, subpoena all the papers I've prepared.
Harold, you're right. He kills her to make it look like I did it to stop her from signing.
Smart. Very smart. But now that we know, we may be able to trap him.
Wait a minute. I just thought of something else. Was it just coincidence that he came to see Anne that night?
Doctor seeing his patient?
So late? Tell me, do you think it possible that he knew I was going to be there? That he came so that he would be taking no chances that I'd lose my nerve?
Who would know that you were going to be there?
I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, what about Lupescu?
Here, I've got his number in my book. Let's see. Here. Here, I have it. Bill, get on the other phone, quick. Dr. Lupescu? This is Harold Gifford calling.
Oh, yes. The late Mrs. Sperling's attorney. Yes. What can I do for you?
Doctor, you may not be aware of the fact that Mrs. Sperling has left you the major portion of her estate.
No. Really? Well, this comes as a complete surprise. Are you certain?
I have the papers right in front of me. There's only one little hitch. Trouble. It seems that Mr. Sperling intends to take the matter to court to have the will thrown out.
Thrown out? He can do that?
Oh, I don't think so. Everything is perfectly legal. However, he can claim undue influence, pressure, etc., etc.
One moment. Mrs. Sperling had signed the will?
Oh, yes.
That is not what she told me.
What? I thought that you said...
Oh, well, you see, well, doctors are privy to confidences, and Mrs. Spurling...
Hadn't actually told you about changing the will, right?
Well, I would say, yes. However...
She had not told you that she had signed the new will.
No. As a matter of fact, I was trying to dissuade her from making me the beneficiary.
Well, you can refuse to accept it, you know. That would make Mr. Spurling's suit unnecessary.
And he would get it?
Oh, yes. He would very likely get everything. As a matter of fact, I understand the police have a witness who can completely exonerate Mr. Spurling.
Oh, what is her name?
I don't know her name, Doctor. But I suppose it is one of those false leads thrown out by the police to trap the real killer, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you say, Doctor? Doctor?
Yes, of course.
One more thing. There are certain little legal formalities. I must have your signature on several documents, and...
I can't be in your offices at 3 tomorrow.
3 o'clock will be fine. Goodbye. Bill, I think we've knocked him off base. He's got an accomplice.
And it suddenly occurs to me that I know her name.
Hello?
Adrian?
Damn it, Bill. I told you not
to
press.
Don't hang up, please. Now, look, I've got to see you.
No, that's impossible. I just heard on the news that you'd been arrested.
I was. I'm out on bail. I'm coming over.
No, if you come here...
Didn't you plan this thing with me?
Bill, you leave me out of this. I warn you, it'll do you no good to involve me.
Stay right where you are. I'm coming over.
Bill! Oh, I've got to get out of here.
Well, my dear Adrian, where are you going?
Frank, Bill just called. He'll be here in a few minutes.
Oh, will he? He was arrested late this afternoon.
He posted bail. He's out. He's coming here.
I don't believe you are lying. Lying as usual.
He mustn't find you here. He'll know everything if he finds us together.
I won't be here long, my dear. Only you will be here. But you won't be a very cooperative witness.
Witness?
Yes, I heard how you have been talking.
Who told you that?
Mr. Gifford, Mrs. Spurling's lawyer.
It's a lie. I wouldn't betray you.
He said the police had a witness who could clear Spurling of the murder charge. Only you can do that.
He was trying to trick you, don't you see?
No, he is too stupid to lie to me. I distinctly remember he said it was a woman.
No.
He said she...
You've fallen into a trap. You've got to get out of here.
I don't believe you. You've turned the tables on me. You've thrown in again with Spurling because you think he'll have the money.
No.
Don't
Frank.
Move away, my dear.
No, don't.
The needle won't be painful.
Don't, please. Please, you're wrong. Don't.
Hold
please.
Still.
No.
You can't run.
No.
You can't lie.
Please.
Ever again.
No. Hey, you. Oh.
Open up! Police! There he is at the window. Stop him!
Stay where you are, Lupescu, or I'll shoot. You're under arrest.
And you'll be interested to know, Bill, that the DA has dropped all charges against you. You're free to do anything you please, go anywhere you please.
Yeah.
You're a very lucky guy. You've got off easy. But you don't seem very happy.
I'm not. Harold, I realize what a miserable character I am.
Well, you'll get over it. The money will help you forget.
About that money.
Yeah.
I want you to set up some sort of thing where it can be given away. Give it away in Ann's name, all of it.
I see. What about you?
Me? I'll make out. I'll make out.
Bill Spurling, a weak man, a selfish man, urged, persuaded, walked down the dark road that led to murder. Only a last-second breath of decency deterred him from his purpose and made him realize that he almost killed the one person in the world he loved and who loved him. Our cast included Mason Adams, Marion Seldes, Vicky Vola, Jackson Beck, and Sid Sloan. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Mystery Theater was also brought to you in part by ShopRite Supermarkets, where you get a lot more for a little less. And by Suburban Savings, with offices throughout New Jersey. The preceding program was furnished by the Columbia Broadcasting System.
In the Mutual Broadcasting System studios in Washington, D.C. Now, my commentary.
The Watergate cover-up trial resumed here in Washington today, with John Ehrlichman's attorney portraying his client as a decent White House square whose frank advice to former President Richard Nixon had been rewarded by being thrown out into the street by Mr. Nixon. Miami attorney William S. Freites said that Ehrlichman fully believed in Nixon's innocence, all the while the former president kept his knowledge of Watergate a secret. Freites, in his closing arguments to the jury in the trial, declared, "Here is this dedicated, loyal servant trying to clear his commander-in-chief regardless of who gets hurt. And over here is the commander-in-chief sitting in his office, knowing all the time who was calling the shots." Freites' closing arguments were the third in the trial in which five former Nixon aides or re-election officials have been charged with conspiring to obstruct the investigation of the June 17, 1972 break-in at the Watergate headquarters of the Democratic National Committee. U.S. District Court Judge John Sirica is now pressing to finish the arguments and get the case to the jury for deliberations over this weekend. The jury had a holiday recess on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Today, Freites said that throughout the spring of 1973, Ehrlichman repeatedly urged full Watergate disclosures. Nixon's reaction, the attorney said, was to keep secret his own Watergate knowledge and to reject Ehrlichman's recommendations. Freites imagined Nixon is saying, "You don't tell John about it. John's a square. He wants us to reveal it. But by God, if we do reveal it, we're caught." Freites said that when Ehrlichman was summoned to the presidential retreat at Camp David, Maryland, Nixon praised him as his so-called conscience, even though the deception of the ex-White House domestic affairs chief was continuing. The lawyer said that Nixon was firing Ehrlichman and throwing him out into the street in order to protect himself. Freites accused Nixon of keeping secret from Ehrlichman the very evidence that finally drove the former president from his office. Nixon resigned in August, of course, after disclosures of a June 23, 1972 tape recording in which he gave his formal approval for use of the CIA to block the initial FBI investigation into Watergate. Freites told the jury the president never told John Ehrlichman about that. He never found out about it until you folks learned about it in the newspapers. Freites noted the impassioned closing argument of Chief Trial Prosecutor James Neal, who frequently mimicked the defendants and held the courtroom's fixed attention for 2 days last week. Freites urged the jury to be swayed only by evidence and not by the silver tongue of a great lawyer. Secret Service officials reported today that routine security precautions were in effect at the White House, despite that Christmas Day gate crashing by a self-proclaimed messiah who kept guards at bay for hours with bogus explosives. Meanwhile, workmen were beginning to repair the dented gates on a driveway along Pennsylvania Avenue that the intruder rammed his automobile through. The usual crowd of tourists entered through the tour gate on another side of the presidential mansion. Officials responsible for White House security displayed a pretty calm approach to the entire incident, which came 10 months after a young GI crashed a stolen Army helicopter on the White House lawn. Treasury Secretary William Simon commended the Secret Service for its professional handling of the incident, but said that it demonstrated the need to see how similar things could be averted again. He held no conferences with his Secret Service or Executive Protection Service subordinates today to discuss the matter. Spokesman for both the Secret Service and its Executive Protective Service branch said that their constant reevaluation of their White House security would lead to a closer examination of the incident, but that a report might take several weeks to prepare. Another report, a secret report on allegations that the Central Intelligence Agency violated its charter by conducting domestic spying operations, was en route to President Ford in Vail, Colorado today. That report, according to one source, contains much information that is new to Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. It was transmitted to Kissinger by CIA Director William Colby. The president requested the report after the allegations were published. Former CIA Director Richard Helms has denied that his agency spied on American citizens during his tenure. Helms is now the ambassador to Iran. He issued his denial through the State Department. He reportedly has left Tehran for a European vacation and is expected to return to this country after his holiday. State Department spokesman Robert Anderson said today Ambassador Helms has categorically denied that under his stewardship, the CIA conducted illegal domestic operations against anti-war activists or dissidents, or that any unit to do so was created under him as director. Federal law, of course, prohibits any domestic intelligence activity by the Central Intelligence Agency. That jurisdiction is solely the FBI's. The New York Times last week reported that during the presidency of Nixon, the CIA maintained files on some 10,000 American citizens associated primarily with the anti-Vietnam War movement, and that it engaged in break-ins and surveillance within the United States. In New York today, more than 100 prominent Americans from a broad spectrum of professions joined today in pledging President Ford and the Congress their support for strong and effective measures to deal with the nation's energy crisis. The group organized as Citizens for a Strong Energy Program declared, "We can delay no longer. America must curtail its need for imported oil and go full speed ahead to develop alternative energy sources. What the country needs now is decisive action," according to the group. "And just as we count on you to provide it, you can count on us to support it." The group outlined three general goals. First, to reduce domestic oil consumption by 1 million barrels a day by July 4, 1976. Secondly, to set up an emergency standby program to deal with any future embargoes. And thirdly, to step up domestic energy supplies. Peter Peterson, the chairman of the investment banking firm of Lehman Brothers and a former Secretary of Commerce, spelled out the group's position at a news conference in New York. He was joined by Vernon Jordan, Jr., the executive director of the National Urban League, and John Connor, the chairman of Allied Chemical Corporation. Other members of the group include I.W. Abel, the president of the United Steelworkers of America, former Housing and Urban Development Secretary George Romney, author Theodore White, Robert Six, the president of Continental Airlines, Robert Sarnoff, the president of RCA Corporation, Harvard economist Dr. John Kenneth Galbraith, former CBS president Frank Stanton, and William McChesney Martin, Jr., the former chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank. A group recommended against the resort to formal rationing of gasoline except for any short-term emergency that may arise. It said that many or all of its members would support measures which would include tariffs to limit oil imports, ceilings on oil imports, gasoline or fuel oil taxes to discourage oil consumption with rebates for the poor, vigorous enforcement of the 55-mile-per-hour speed limit throughout the country, a system of energy rates to penalize the use of wasteful amounts of energy, the establishment of emergency stockpiles to minimize supply disruptions, and finally, major programs of research on both nuclear and non-nuclear forms of energy. From the Mutual Studios in Washington, I'm Fulton Lewis, and that's the top of the news as it looks from here.